Welcome back. Hour number three tonight. It's called Long Form Radio Programming. 3 hours. Happy to do it. Always have. I used to do 4 hours when I was with Premier Radio Networks. They had me doing 4 hours for quite a while. That was a long haul. Four different guests, 4 hours. Three is perfect. Good number three. Mitchell Henderson is back on the situation in the now prostrate corpse of Ukraine, which has so many mines in it. It's going to take 750 years to demine the country safely. And that's just along the line of combat, basically, is being looked at by more and more military strategists who are scratching their head, I guess. The number of losses that the Zelensky Zionist Bolshevik government are racking up are astounding. It's well over 400,000 dead now. Dead Christian goyim. There aren't a lot of Jews in the Ukrainian military, let me put it that way. So what we have there is a meat grinder, a death mill. No question that the Ukrainians are just throwing human lives into the dumpster as fast as they possibly can. They don't want anybody left to stand up to them. They're not going to give that country up. No chance. Whatever happens in the end probably has already been decided to some degree, but they're not going to give it up. So let's talk to Mitch and find out how he sees it. Conspiracy theories are running rampant. Mitch, welcome back, and what do you have this week?
Okay, yeah, I want to talk about conspiracy theories. There's a plethora of conspiracy theories out there. People spend hour upon hour looking at them and getting into the minutiae of it. Now, I do this, too, sometimes. I'm guilty of that. So how does the CIA feel about the ones they do not start? They appreciate the help. The general purpose of conspiracy theories is misdirection and creating fear of the government and what they can do. I had a conversation with an intelligence operator this past week to look deeply into this. Uh-huh. He told me that what makes conspiracy theories effective is that people get bogged down with the how when they should be asking the why. This makes sense from the point of view of a criminal investigation. To solve a crime, you must follow a certain formula. When I worked homicide, first I had to identify the victim. If I know who the victim is, then I can figure out a motive. Then I can figure out who had the motive. Finally, you use forensics to prove who did it. But you must know the why before the how is of any value. If you know how it was done but don't know who did it, what's the difference? What point does it make? So the why is the key to solving the crime. For example, the how of the January 6, 2021 protest at the Capitol shows clearly that it was a genuine peaceful protest. So why were so many peaceful protesters arrested and most are still in jail for what amounts to a simple trespass at best? Why did the government do this? Because they wanted to make white Christian people afraid to protest. The how is the bullshit, false narrative in the Department of Justice that the Department of Justice fabricated. The truth is that the government was the only violent actor that day. Black Capitol Police Lieutenant Michael Byrd shot and killed an unarmed white woman, Ashley Babbitt.
He executed her, Mitch. That was an execution.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
Sickening.
He was in fear for his life. That's absurd. They had congressional hearings to make an official false narrative. And, you know, the way they push this, if you talk to people, they think that you're a traitor if you say that it was not an insurrection. I mean, they carry this to the very end. The why is to discourage white people from exercising their constitutional right to assembly. Then the Department of Justice released a letter ordering FBI agents to investigate parents who complained to their school board. We know how they did it, but why did they do it? They did that to deprive white people and Christians of their constitutional right to petition the government for the redress of grievances. Then they pile on criminal charges in order to prevent the most popular opposition, Donald Trump, from becoming president again. We see how they did this, but ask yourself, why did they do this? This cancels your vote and cancels American democracy. It is meant to scare you by making you realize that there's no longer a justice system in America and that you can be arrested for anything. If they will arrest a former president on bogus charges, they can and definitely will arrest any of us on the same kind of bogus charges. You will see that just as there are no fair elections, there is no fair trials either. If you are white or Christian, you do not have a voice, and you will absolutely not be treated fairly. In all these cases, they want whites and Christians to shut up and obey. That is why the reality of this is clear to see. The effect is clear to see, too. They're succeeding. In 2021, Daryl Brooks, a black man, intentionally ran his vehicle into a Christmas parade in Kenosha, Wisconsin, killing six white people and injuring 62. Although associated with the black racist hate group called the Black Hebrew Israelites, his crime was never called a hate crime. You see, black people cannot be charged with a hate crime no matter what. Just how white soldiers get a dishonorable discharge for using the services of prostitutes, but black soldiers are freely allowed to use prostitutes because it is part of their culture, that we have to respect that.
Oh, good
how
points.
Is this
good
justice
points.
And equality before the law? It is not. Right. The Kenosha racist-motivated mass murder was barely mentioned in the press, in contrast to the mass shooting in Jacksonville, Florida, of three black people by a white man. It was deemed right. a racist hate crime immediately and without hesitation. The coverage has been overwhelming and constant. They are blowing this up to create hate and to use it as another pretext to abolish the Second Amendment. So this is not about race. It is about freedom and liberty. There are black people that hate the woke cultural Marxism just like anyone else, but the government must divide and conquer. Watch when a black racist attacks and murders some white people in retaliation. There will be no outrage. That is intentional also, intended to create more hatred. The government is nothing but a huge hate machine. It is how they manipulate us, through fear and hate. On September 11th, 2001, the U.S. government murdered 3,000 innocent Americans. Anybody with explosives and demolitions experience can figure out how by simply watching the implosion of Towers 1 and 2 hit by the planes and the exact same implosion of Tower 7 without being hit by anything. If you have knowledge or experience with explosions, there is not much more to say. I do have experience, and I am convinced. Then in the rubble, there was a cross made from girders. They had to take it away because it was a Christian cross, and that really does offend Americans. Really. Now, why did they need to take it away? If you're familiar with explosives, you know that if you want to blow a girder, you use a cutting charge. This is like a triangular sheet of a plastic explosive that you place on the girder to cut the beam. You place the base of the cutting charge where you want the cut to be, and the peak of the triangle pointed away from it. What does a beam or girder with a cutting charge look like? There should be molten metal where the cutting charge went off. It should look like the beam that was sitting there that they wanted to take away. Okay, so most people are not experienced with explosives. So to the joy of the CIA conspiracy theorists, get bogged down on the hows, and the hows start proliferating. They used a directed energy weapon to give it. Why make up an additional method of destruction when a super weapon is not needed? Because the CIA wants us to think that the U.S. government has a directed energy weapon that they can vaporize Americans anywhere where they are. They used them in Paradise, California fire, and they used them on Maui a few weeks ago. The CIA loves this narrative. They love that we are so focused on the how that we don't ask the why. It is the why that is important.
Right.
They did this to abolish the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, our right to privacy. If you think about it, abortion rights were extrapolated from the Fourth Amendment, so it follows that the right to abortion had to go away with our right to privacy because we don't have that right anymore. Also, the digital age was being born, and the right to privacy was an obstacle to big tech companies making money from their platforms and apps. Mining personal information is a major money maker. The government wanted total control over all communications. They scared us with their terrorist attacks to get us to give up our privacy. But that was not enough to justify the government murdering 3,000 innocent civilians. They wanted a war on terrorism. They said that we cannot call it a crusade or a war on Islamic fundamentalism because that is racist. It was a generic war on generic terrorists. Before we even abandoned Afghanistan, the pedophile Joe Biden declared that the greatest threat to democracy was white people. The Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said the same. This was a bait and switch as the tool to exterminate white people and Christians. This is why 9/11 happened. It is so important that they would rather you remain focused on the how. The how gets wild. Directed energy weapons exist. Ones that can set Maui on fire exist. However, the United States and NATO do not have any such weapons. If they were in fact used, please not dwell on the how, but rather ask why they were used and get a much more important answer. That leads to a much bigger conspiracy and tells you about this world and all the divisions in it. The answer, there really are no enemies. All of them are in on it. It follows the World Economic Forum agenda of wars and rumors of wars to keep the world destabilized and the world in crisis so they can transform us into the Antichrist New World Order. Another example of this conspiracy theory mission creep is the John F. Kennedy assassination. In November 2022, the CIA admitted that they murdered Kennedy. By March, I had people telling me that the Mossad killed Kennedy. Okay, the CIA admitted it, so the conspiracy theory must continue no matter what. That is the power of focusing on the how instead of the why. There is more to this, but unfortunately, I cannot burn my sources, and saying more would get them in trouble. The key takeaway is to focus on why things happen, not how they happen. They want you to focus on how because it will never matter. There will never be an investigation or a trial. They just do not want you to ask why it happened. What is the government's goal? So, Prigozhin was assassinated last week. You can look at the footage. If you have seen an aircraft blown out of the air, this looks familiar. At high altitude, a bomb went off, severing a wing from the jet. The wings have fuel, so there would be a fire. There would also be a major depressurization, which would render everyone on board unconscious within minutes. A jet with only one wing will just drop to the earth. Okay, that is a simple how. We will be hearing intricate and complex explanations forever. But it does not matter. We know the victim, Prigozhin, and nine other people died. Remember this. What about the motive? The U.S. press was quick to blame Putin because of the mutiny. Of course, we will believe this because we hate Russia and Russians. As Orwell would say, they have always been our enemy. In a vacuum of people asking why, we would believe this explanation. Russia put a bomb on the plane and killed Prigozhin because he betrayed Putin. But let's look at a different motive. Good investigators look at all possible motives. The CIA paid Prigozhin a total of $7 billion to overthrow Putin. Prigozhin stiffed the CIA. The CIA cannot allow that to happen. A new war is kicking up in Africa, and Prigozhin was the point man in Russian assistance. They could have killed him in Africa, but it was important to do it in Russia so Putin would be blamed. Where did the CIA approach Prigozhin to bribe him? In Sudan. Wagner forces are in Sudan. The Ministry of Defense made the connection. Wagner forces are mercenaries, and they fight for money. How often will the CIA be able to approach these men to recruit assassins and saboteurs? Remember, there is a CIA-backed company of Ukrainian commandos in Sudan. After the mutiny, the Russian government decided to bring these men into the national forces. They all had to sign oaths of loyalty to Russia, and they had to come under the Ministry of Defense. Prigozhin just got back from Africa, where all his men signed these oaths before his plane went down.
Hold on, Russia has excellent relations. One question. All right. I do not have confirmation that those men signed that oath. I do remember the first time they were tried to, before they, the government, I guess it was Putin, tried to, or the MOD, tried to force them to sign the oath. And my sources tell me only like five or six people signed it out of the 20, 25,000 fighters there were. Nobody signed it. So do you know that, that this order from Putin was followed? Did they sign it? They're in Belarus for the most part.
Well,
did they sign that oath?
I'm talking about he just went there to Africa now, like just before he died, and he was having people take the oath down there.
Interesting.
So,
I didn't know this.
I'm going to get into this. I'm going to get into this a little bit. So,
all right.
Russia has excellent relations with Africa, and he wanted more control of military people that are assisting African armies. Putin really had no reason to kill Prigozhin. So how can we determine? Well, let me get back into the signing. It's just that they've got a there's a world war coming up in Africa, and Russia is already involved in it. They shipped a lot of aircraft to Mali and whatnot. So you know, he wanted to kind of clean up the act a little bit. Okay. Mm-hmm. And in order to pressure him, he said, well, you got these Wagner guys in Central African Republic, they need resupplies, and those resupplies come from the Russian air base in Syria at Latakia. And he just said, well, if you want flights to go through there, if you're not in the under the MOD, you cannot take planes through Latakia. So he kind of pressured the Wagner group to, you know, come under the aegis of the MOD, because they are worried about these guys being paid to make attacks in Russia.
Got it.
You know.
Got it. All right.
So, how can we determine who did it? By the modus operandi. Criminals are humans and creatures of habit. Criminals have a signature way that they commit a crime. If you have several suspects, then the traditional habitual way that they can commit their crimes can distinguish who did it. The USA began assassinating people after 1947 when the CIA was created by the National Security Act. Since 1947, the CIA has carried out 59 assassinations using bombs. In each case, the targeted person was killed, plus a minimum of three other victims, family or associates, up to a maximum of 40 with one bomb. Our last bombing assassination in Kabul on August 29, 2021, killed 10 innocent civilians, an aid worker, including seven children. These were human beings, not insects. We did not always use bombs. In 1953, we overthrew Mohammad Mossadegh in Iran. We did not kill him, but we did kill 300 Iranians in the process. In 1953, we also assassinated Rafael Trujillo in the Dominican Republic by firearm. Six people working for us were executed. Just as a side note, in 1990, when I was infiltrating the Cali cartel in Colombia, I worked with the dictator Trujillo's son, Radamus Trujillo. It was the Cali boss's phone call to him in Panama that put the cartel in prison. The Cali cartel murdered him outside Cali later that year. In 1961, the CIA murdered President Patrice Lumumba of Congo. We killed two other people also. In 1963, the CIA assassinated President Ngo Diem in South Vietnam, killing two, and 3 weeks later assassinated U.S. President John F. Kennedy. Three other people died in that operation, and Governor John Connally of Texas was wounded. In 1968, the CIA killed both Robert F. Kennedy and Martin Luther King without collateral damage. And in 1970, they assassinated General Rene Schneider in Chile. It was supposed to be a kidnapping, but it turned into a murder. So that wasn't successful. Okay. In summary, the CIA almost always kills other people when they assassinate someone. Only twice out of 66 assassinations did the CIA kill only the intended target. So let's look at Soviet Russia. They carried out 36 assassinations. 4 were poisoned, 2 were strangled, 4 were stabbed to death, 24 were shot to death, but only 2 bombings. One with a bomb in his bed, and one got a bomb in a box of chocolates. In all cases, only the intended target was killed with no collateral damage. Okay? They're sort of professional assassins. They're not messy like we are. Since 1991, the Russian FSB has assassinated 118 people in 10 countries. Most of these were Islamic terrorists. 4 were poisoned, 2 killed by grenades, 2 killed by missiles, 1 killed by a landmine, 107 were shot, and 2 only were killed by bombs. In Qatar, the bomb wounded the target's son. What distinguishes Russian assassinations from American is that they just killed the target without collateral damage. Only twice out of 66 assassinations did the CIA kill only intended targets. In Russia, there was only a wounded unintended victim once. The CIA used bombs 59 times, where Russia only used bombs a total of 9 times out of 118. Or let's say, not say bombs, say explosions, because the landmine, the missiles, and the grenades are technically bombs also. So if we look at the modus operandi of CIA versus KGB methods, who does the finger point to in a Prigozhin assassination? 9 people got killed with Prigozhin. If the glove fits, you must convict. The CIA killed Prigozhin. Okay, so... listen, this Prigozhin thing, it already has a new conspiracy theory, and that is that he got on a separate plane and flew to Baku in Azerbaijan.
But I think that's nonsense. Of course it's nonsense, I agree. Here's the deal. Did I send you the information I had about the landing gear being repaired at the airport in Moscow? The word I got is that the landing gear had a problem, and it had to be serviced at the airport in Moscow while Prigozhin and all the others were there doing whatever they were doing. And if you know anything about landing gear, and most of you do, the landing gear folds up, it goes into a compartment, and the doors close. All they had to do was put a cigarette pack-sized bomb in that compartment, pay somebody off $1 million or whatever, and that plane goes down. Boom. That's probably how they got the bomb on board. The landing gear was worked on, and that did it. That's what I hear.
Yep. Yeah. So, I heard right away. Listen, my U.S. sources don't even claim that the Russians do it.
Here's the bigger part of the story. You're right, and I do believe you're right. The silence coming out of D.C. was deafening. There was very little said about it. Nothing. No denial. No nothings. And I think you're right. And I also think that the Russians right now talk about a red line being crossed. How many times does the line have to be crossed? They're worried probably because they've got moles or spies or paid terrorists working in their airline industry or their repair, whatever. They got to that plane somehow and put a bomb on it, probably in the landing gear compartment. So this is bad.
Protecting him. So he doesn't have the people to protect him like Putin would have, okay?
Correct.
So he's a private individual. He's sort of on his own. And you can get to anybody. I've had people trying to kill me all my life, practically, right. and people that threatened to hunt me down and get me and stuff, okay? But I'll tell you something right now. It has not happened yet because revenge is a dish best served cold. But I never make the mistake of thinking that they cannot get to me. I can be found. I can be attacked. I know that because I can find those people and I can attack them. Okay? Mm-hmm. And I don't have the resources they have. Mm-hmm. But yet I can still do it if I have to. So,
yeah.
So next well I want said. To get on to the sanctions war because...
Oh, let me ask you one other thing, Mitch. Let me ask you one other thing. On my military summary videos that I put up on at the top of the homepage, that guy is very good, by the way, excellent. And I think that his projection, it actually fit my way of thinking. The Russians lost a Robin Hood. They lost a folk hero. Prigozhin was a folk hero to most of Russia and the Russian people because of what he and his Wagner troops accomplished in Bakhmut and one other city down there. They did the impossible. They overcame in extraordinary odds and cleaned the city. And it cost them 22,000 dead, but they did it. So who's going to take over? Who in the entire Russian military has any kind of a we'll call it a social media presence or any kind of celebrity? I hate to use the word, but that's what it's about. Prigozhin was a celebrity. He was the PR guy, the media guy. Utkin was the strategist, and we know the difference. The people at Military Summary surmised, projected, that it might be Surovikin who is appointed to take charge of Wagner. He's the only one. He was a friend of Prigozhin's, and he didn't act when that fake coup was launched. He didn't do anything. He just sat back and kind of watched. He doesn't like Shoigu. But if they were going to appoint anybody would be General Armageddon Surovikin to take charge of Wagner. Now, that was projected by Military Summary, and I had actually thought about the same thing. Who could they get who has a presence? General Armageddon Surovikin. But nothing since. Anyhow, go ahead.
I think you could be very right, because what Prigozhin's actual skill was in logistics. Okay, that's what kind of got him to build the PMC up, make negotiations, contracts, stuff like that. So it's administrative logistics stuff. So they need two things. They need a good general like Surovikin, and they need a great logistical person, okay,
gotcha.
A logistical administrative person. And they can find that, okay? It's not like there was just one person that could do that. There's probably lots of people that can do that.
Remember, Surovikin was shamed, and he was dismissed as the head of the Air Force last week. So he is a man without a job right now. And he could do it. They could elevate him if they understand how important it is.
Individual now.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
So he could take over a private company. It's just going to be a private company under the auspices of the Ministry of Defense. You have to remember that America has crap loads of contractors, military contractors all over the place. As a matter of fact, most of the people who fought in our wars and terrorism, most of the actual fighting on the ground was done by contractors, not by, you know, regular American military.
Gotcha.
So all that Putin is doing is he's streamlining the PMC contractors into the same situation that they streamline, like American contractors are streamlined into. And it's the same thing. Do we require an oath of loyalty from these contractors? Well, let me tell you, most contractors already have top secret clearances before they become contractors, and they certainly have them. They have to have one to be a contractor. So in America, our loyalty oath is really the Office of Personnel Management extending secret clearances to people so that they can do it. Okay. So, you know, it's not quite the same thing in Russia. They don't necessarily have to have top secret clearances because the nature of the work that the Wagner Group is doing is different than American contractors often do. So Putin's not doing anything weird at all. Okay, he's doing what we do. He's doing what the British do. I mean, listen, there used to be executive outcomes. There used to be all these mercenary groups in the United States and stuff. And one of the things they wanted to do is they wanted to bring those under the U.S. government, okay, still be private individuals, get paid well, but ultimately they are working for the government. So Putin is just doing the same thing. It's nothing weird, okay?
Got it.
So in South Africa, we had some movement on the sanctions war. When the United States and NATO sanctioned Russia, they started the sanctions war and sowed the seeds of American economic collapse. You see, nations are tired of Americans sanctioning them for disobedience. What are they disobeying? LGBT rights? Kenya, Uganda, and Ghana have made LGBT a crime. The governments of Namibia, Malawi, and Botswana all want to make gay marriage legal. The people in those nations are out protesting this move. Why do the governments want to legalize it? It is because they have a LGBT population of their own? No. These governments want to legalize gay marriage because many Westerners that work and live in these countries want to be able to have their gay lovers with them when they live there in their nations. Liberal woke governments say yes, but their people say no. If they do not legalize sodomy the United States will sanction them. In other words, the U.S. dollar is a weapon used against freedom and sovereignty of independent nations. So de-dollarization means a disaster for us, but independence and freedom for the rest of the world. The BRICS movement is an attempt to liberate the world from slavery to the dollar and freedom from sodomy. Last week, the BRICS meeting in Johannesburg admitted 6 new members. Argentina, because they already have good trade with Brazil. Ethiopia, because they are the fastest growing economy in Africa, and the African Union is headquartered there in Addis Ababa. Iran, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, because that is the key region that supports the petrodollar and is essential to destroying the dollar. Egypt, because it is the strongest military power in Africa. The new group will be called BRICS Plus. BRICS Plus controls 36% of the surface of the earth, 46% of the world's population, and controls 54% of world oil production. Quite simply, that means if we piss them off, they could embargo us, and fuel would cost a minimum of $8 a gallon. Okay. So it will control 36% of the world gross domestic product in purchasing power parity terms. That means based on what your money can buy instead of just comparing the exchange rates. The G7 nations in 1992 accounted for 42% of the world GDP, but now only accounts for 29.9%. Remember, the BRICS is going to control 36%. So that's bigger than the economies of the G7 nations. The G7 nations are the United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, and the European Union. This will shut down the dollar as the global exchange currency, destroying the Bretton Woods global financial system that is based on the dollar. The sanctions war is a fight between a unipolar world led by the United States or a multipolar world that respects all nations, because America respects no one. Let me caution you against thinking that this is a battle between good and evil. It is rather a battle between the evil parties. All are under control of the Antichrist. For example, China, India, and Russia have all introduced central bank digital currencies. CBDC is the foundation upon which the financial chip or the mark of the beast will be imposed. The mark of the beast is the final decision you must make in the future. If you take it, you will suffer horribly. It is exactly like the COVID vaccine. You could get some short-term financial benefits from getting the shot, like keeping your job. In the long run, you're going to get sick and die. Revelation 16:2 tells us that those who take the mark of the beast will develop ugly, festering sores. You see, the COVID pandemic was a rehearsal for the mark of the beast. It was an obedience test. Remember the hatred stirred up against anti-vaxxers? When an unvaccinated person died, they were happy that they got what they deserved. Unfortunately for them, not that many unvaccinated died. Consequently, the government created a new bullshit meme saying that the unvaccinated caused the vaccinated to die. How this works,
Mitch,
I do not know.
Ugly festering sores.
It's nonsense.
Ugly festering sores, as in shingles? Pretty ugly.
Yeah. And
festering sores. Common. Yeah.
So That is unlike what any other disease does. It was just a hate tactic. It heated up to where the woke said that the unvaccinated lose their jobs, get forced to take the shot, go to jail, and a few even said that the unvaccinated should be killed. This is just a preview of what it will be like when they are pressuring everybody to get the financial chip implanted. So last week, Brazil passed legislation outlawing homophobia, allowing prison time for any hate or anti-gay bigotry. In South Africa, they are genociding white people, and the government is solidly Zionist. Should we be surprised that it was Zionist Jews that encouraged the comprehensive genocide of white people in South Africa? The goal of the woke in the U.S. is to make white people a minority and then just kill them off when they have no control anymore. The multipolarists are just like the only unipolar, except far more inclusive than the USA. No matter who wins, we lose. So let me cover a little bit on our Republican globalists also, because we had the first debates come up. Last week was also the first debate of the Republican Party. It showed that the Republicans are the same as the Democrats. They mentioned Oliver Anthony's song, Rich Men North of Richmond. When Anthony was asked about that, he said the song was about them. These people are not your friends. They don't care about you. The only independent thinker that was not bought out by the elites was Vivek Ramaswamy. He said that climate change is a hoax and that we need to get out of Ukraine. Odd, it was the first generation American that has genuine concern for his country.
I have Mitch, I have a very big expose on Vivek coming out in the next day. He's a tool of Israel.
Cool.
Oh, he's just another player. He didn't get there accidentally.
He is.
Yeah, and the word is he put out. He made his $1 billion on a false, this is the charge, a fake Alzheimer's drug. He looks like a world-class hustler from what I'm being told now. I'll have the video out. I'll send it to you as soon as it's done. But he's another phony. They all are. They wouldn't be in those positions.
He gave it away during the debates because when Nikki Haley accused him of abandoning Israel, he said, oh, no, he wasn't going to do that.
He'll never stop supporting Israel.
She was saying that, Nikki Haley said that America needs Israel. Israel doesn't need America. I mean, wow, these people really just, you know, their obedience to Israel is just overwhelming.
Well, they're all wearing knee pads all the time.
Oh, yeah. So DeSantis is not a man of any integrity and was wishy-washy on Ukraine. Nikki Haley, who used to be on the board at Northrop Grumman, is a true swamp creature. She even claimed that Putin said that when Ukraine was solved, he would march on Poland and the Baltics. That was a lie. That was a blatant lie to the American people. And she knows that she just made that up. Putin has never said any such thing. That was Northrop Grumman talking through her. Mike Pence, of course, thinks Ukraine is important, but the American people and America are only secondary to that. This is all nonsense. America does not have now or in the future free and fair elections. The campaign and your vote exists to make it seem that we have a choice. We have no choice and no voice, no votes. Honestly, at this point, every Constitution, Bill of Rights, loving American should vote for Donald Trump and no one else. He will win the vote, and they will never allow him to take office. A vote for a Democrat is a vote for the Antichrist. A vote for Trump is a vote against the Antichrist simply because they will never allow him to take office. Joe Biden will be our reelected president in 2024. In 2028, Gavin Newsom will be the president of the United States.
I would submit and suggest that RFK is the anointed one at this point to take over. He's been saying everything.
He's
being handled perfectly.
Gavin Newsom
Say what?
Is the man. He's
Beijing loves
Newsom.
Beijing loves him. You're totally right.
Sure.
I still think RFK is going to be in there.
Yeah.
RFK will be looked at. Trump will be compromised. He'll say he can never handle it legally, whatever. They'll come up with some crap. And I think RFK will be the candidate of compromise. Everything he said is rather like something Trump would say, most of it. And he's doing the same kind of campaigning that Trump did in 15 and 16. He's saying all the right things. And if you watch RFK, you'll see it. He's being handled perfectly, in my view. It's just a scam.
The bottom line is, he's a Kennedy.
People feel sorry for him. They want him to be able to complete the Camelot dream and all that. He's compromised, Mitch. He wouldn't do anything step out of line. No way.
They're American royalty is what they are.
Right.
So, so there's two kinds of people in the world. There's those who think they are good, kind, and decent people, and those who know that they are bad, selfish, and dysfunctional people. Politicians fall into the first category. People who think they are good, kind, and decent people are, in fact, monsters. They are guilty of the worst sin, pride. They will always let you down. Back in the 80s and 90s, drug trafficking circles, it was well accepted that the bad guys kept their word, but the good guys would not. Okay? So even working in law enforcement back in the 80s, in international crime and so forth, I was just amazed at how much personal integrity and honesty the bad guys had, but the total lack of it on the good guy's side. Okay. The good guys will lie to you. The bad guys, when they make a deal, it's a deal, you know. As the head of the Cali cartel personally told me, he says, this business is built on trust. You have to have trust because you don't have a government that you can go to or a court you can go to if somebody stiffs you. So, and just killing people off that stiff you is not good for business either. You need good, reliable, honest people that will do the drug trade for you and with you.
What an interesting insight. Yeah, very good.
Yeah. I talked to the guys I used to work with, and what is their opinion? Their opinion is you know, the bad guys, they tried to take care of people. And I saw this myself, that if somebody got in trouble, they didn't abandon them. They got money up there to give them a lawyer and get them some help. Now, they might not communicate with them after they're arrested, but they will get them money to pay for their lawyers. Very often they pay money to their families and stuff to keep them alive.
That's how the business...
The U.S. government would never do that for you.
No, that's a very interesting statement. That's how that business is run. There is trust, and they do take care of their own, so to speak. If you get in trouble, you know you've got some people behind you. That's interesting. You don't think about it like that very often.
Makes sense. I wouldn't know that myself, except I went there and I actually worked for them. Okay, so I knew how they ran business, and the business. When I say calling him in Panama, that's because I was in the office with Miguel Rodriguez Orejuela, the head of Cali Cartel. And he said, well, I want to call a guy in Panama to come and check your business out. And they called him Mr. Rada, but he was Radamas Trujillo, the dictator's son. And he called to his house to ask him if he could come up to Costa Rica and check out my business. But he wasn't home. His wife was there. So Miguel Rodriguez Orejuela told his wife over the phone. He said, oh, when he gets home, have him call this number. And then I memorized that number. And then what happened is when the Colombians used my case to put the cartel guys in jail in Colombia, not to extradite them here, but to put them in jail in Colombia, it was my case that put them in jail. And they were trying to say that, I never met Miguel Rodriguez Orejuela. But they looked. He even bribed people to get rid of that phone number. But you know what? When you're calling on the phone and stuff, those numbers are forever. That's forever recorded. It's recorded in Panama. It's recorded in Colombia, whatever. So they finally found out that phone number that I memorized in the office, and I said that, for example, I said, well, he called Panama from Cali at 9 p.m. on this date. Okay, so when they finally found the long-distance toll, they saw that that number did call the number in Panama, which I also knew, because I had, they gave me Radames Trujillo's number, because I had to call him from Costa Rica to Panama to set up when he was going to come down. And what happened was the prosecutors in Colombia said, oh, how can you explain how Mr. Henderson would know what time and date you called Panama and from what phone number? And the phone number was registered to Miguel Rodriguez's wife. So that is what put them in prison. Of everything I did, that 1 minute made all the difference in the world. That's what put them in jail finally. And the, and poor Radames, at that time, he was supposed to be getting 2 metric tons of cocaine into Panama. But a Panamanian policeman discovered the cocaine and busted it. Okay. Now, the truth is that is exactly what happened, because I knew it from the Panamanian, the Costa Rican, the U.S. government, that was just a legitimate mess. There was no inside nothing. But the cartel thought that that Radames Trujillo ripped them off, and they thought this because when the Trujillo family fled to Switzerland after the dictator Trujillo was deposed, they put all their money into a Swiss bank account, and Radames's number was on it, and he went and took out all the money and left his family with nothing. So this was an international story that everybody knew about. And the Swiss finally said, no, his name is on the account. He could take it legitimately. You know? So he didn't go to jail for that, but he got a bad rep for being a ripoff. So when the 2,000 kilos ended up disappearing, what did they do? Well, they thought, of course, that he took it off. So he ripped him off, in other words. So they called him on it, and he says, oh, no, this is a legitimate bus. So he flew to Cali with an official of the Panamanian government who could tell him that it was just a regular bus. There was nothing amiss in the bus or anything.
Oh,
and they took two girls with them, because Cali is a super party town. You know, I partied there myself. It's the party town of the world, I think. So they took two girls with them to party with, and when they flew into Cali, they took them out to a farm. They tied plastic bags over their head and shot them in the back of the head, all of them, together and stuff, the girls, the guys, everybody, okay? And then dumped the body because they said, yeah, he did this. What they did not do is they did not go kill Radames' wife, though, in Panama. They left her alone.
But Radames, so, dead.
Radames Trujillo.
Unreal. Yep. Unreal. What was you, so you were trying, was this a, okay, I don't want you to get in trouble here, but you were trying to infiltrate. This is like a movie, right?
Oh, yeah. I did infiltrate. This is what happened. What happened is when I was working on Tampa Police Department, one day I was on the vice squad, and one day they said, oh, we got to do a big drug bust over in St. Petersburg. Well, the St. Petersburg cops were going to be there, but they pulled cops from Tampa to go over and help. It was just a 1 kilo bust. But I went over for that, and then I had to go over for the trial. Like, once a month, I had to go to Pinellas County to the courthouse. And they never had a trial. This is what happens when somebody's an informant, when somebody's working for the government. They keep them on the hook for trials and depositions and stuff. But it gets extended out because he's got to perform before they'll drop the case on him. So two cops, two St. Petersburg cops, were there at the time. One was both were narcotics detectives. So before I left the Tampa Police Department, they had left St. Petersburg Police Department. One had become a customs agent, and one had become a DEA agent. So what basically happened is they had a phony company in Tampa, an import and export company. A guy came in and said, hey, we want to run, basically you want to run cocaine from Cali to here. They said, yes. Well, they wouldn't send a federal agent to Colombia by themselves, so they sent me. They sent me because I knew I worked with these people. They knew me. They knew that I was an undercover operator. They knew that I had plenty of court and police experience and stuff and investigative, blah, blah, blah. And so I was, and I speak Spanish fluently, so they said, okay, you're the guy, why don't you go? And I did it mostly because, not so much for the cocaine, but the Cali Cartel had a policy of killing the children of people that betray them before they kill the people, so that they know before they die that they got their children killed.
Wow.
It was just a horrible thing, and that's the reason I really went there. I wouldn't risk my life over a drug thing, but I would risk my life to save children. That's worthy of it.
Incredibly honorable, Mitch. Wow, what a story. All right, we're out of time, but really quick. How much of the coke gets intercepted each year? What percentage? Just give me a guess. The bus you hear about.
No more than 10%, maybe.
I got you.
No more than 10. For example, when I was sitting in the office in Cali, they were talking on the phone to a guy in Mexico. That night, they moved 50 metric tons under the border into the United States and did not get caught. 50 metric tons of cocaine. That's, 50,000 grams? That's a lot of cocaine.
Oh, my. Wow.
And it did not get caught.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, wow. Thank you for sharing that. It's fascinating. Fascinating. It's like a movie. Wow. Mitch, you take care of yourself. Talk to you next week. It's crazy out there, and I'm here if you need anything.
It is.
Okay. Thanks much.
Okay. Well, I'm going to look for the info that you sent me and stuff.
Okay.
But, you know, once you start looking at these conspiracies, you know what? If you think it's a conspiracy theory, if you think the government did something bad, let me just tell you right now, they did do it. You don't have to prove it to yourself. You're lying about everything all of the time. Okay?
I believe it.
But
okay, Mitch.
It's not easy. It's easy. Just believe them that they're lying.
Got it. Okay. Wow. All right, Mitchell Henderson, and we will be back tomorrow night in 21 hours. Talk to you then.